Hello and welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. This week, we're linking up with a lady who's been the face and heart of changing the online fitness community in the UK under the umbrella of the global fitness phenomenon, Peloton, as the first ever female instructor in the UK. It's not all been rosy though, announcing at the start of 2023 that she'd been undergoing breast cancer treatment for 6 months. A trailblazer for young women with cancer and an inspiration delivering sweat-ridden workouts to all-time music across people's living rooms. Today, I welcome to the podcast, Leanne Hainsby.
Hello, that was a very nice intro. I like that.
Leanne, so first off, it's a new year.
It's a new year.
How would you describe the term sweat?
Ooh, well, for me, I actually very rarely use the word sweat. And I use the word sparkle. In my classes, I like to tell people that we're about to get sparkly. And that's basically a more attractive word to sweat. But it's, I really feel like sweat is like your badge of honor when you're working hard. But I love that feeling when you're like glistening and the hard work. You know, you mentioned there that I've been through my breast cancer treatment. I know we'll get into that a bit more, but I've really started saying that like hard work is a privilege. Being able to sweat is a privilege because sweating means that you're working hard. And if you're working hard, then you're able to work hard, and that's the privilege.
That is so beautiful. Straight off the bat, what a motivation. Because I always think, I love my running. And you know, when the going's getting tough, actually you're like, not everybody is able to do it. And the minute you're stripped of that, it's all you want. Movement fuels the soul.
It's so true. And when I was going through my treatment after I had my surgery, I wasn't able to lift my left arm above my head. Being an ex-professional dancer and having danced from the age of 3 and moving my body so freely without even thinking about it for my whole life, making it a career, it being my biggest passion, it being a hobby, and then going to a stage in life where I couldn't even lift my arm above my head was so strange to me. And I think I got a glimpse into what it's like when you don't have the privilege of being able to move freely. And it's been a lot of hard work trying to get myself back to that place where I can move my whole body freely and trust my body, trust that it will move like that. Movement, I think, is medicine and it's magic. And I feel really grateful that I'm in a place now where I feel like I'm trusting my body more. I'm moving my body more. I'm running the London Marathon. So when you talk about running, I get a bit panicky.
We sparkle.
We sparkle.
We've got lots of sparkling to do before April.
Oh, you do.
I may join you on that start line. I've not quite committed yet. Let's see what happens. Why Peloton? What is it for those people that are maybe new to the concept?
So I think there's a million reasons why I would say Peloton is incredible. I really recognise that things happen to people all the time, and actually this 30 minutes or 20 minutes in someone's day might be that bit of sparkle, that bit of joy. And it feels amazing to be able to be the person that gives somebody that moment in their day.
That is so special. People speak about your classes as being incredibly upbeat. Do you think your background in dance and that understanding of music has enabled you to stand out from the rest and provide something a bit different?
Yeah, I think so. And I also think that from starting at Peloton, that was a choice for me, that my classes would be the joy in someone's day. And I recognize that not everybody wants to be at the top end of the fitness ranking. They just want to move their body and they want to have fun. I feel like I'm on a mission to combine fun and fitness, and my love for music and the fact that I've always in my career been working alongside music, I think that does give me, I don't know, a bit of an edge, or it gives me a deeper connection with people. I mean, my classes, I'm doing stuff from 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, rock, hip hop, dance, Broadway, Spice Girls. Like,
I've heard the Spice Girls this morning. I did the little Spotify search and I listened to one of your playlists. As I walked across the bridge to the train
station, it would have been eclectic.
It was Spice Girls Wannabe. And I was like, this girl is on a serious vibe. There's a real sense of you spreading happiness. How do you manage to keep that positive mindset and continue to share it?
I don't think I do, actually. I think it would be, I'd be lying, basically, if I said that I always felt positive. But when it comes to Peloton, there's so many hours of work that goes into like a class or a moment that I'm going to share with people in the studio. I really spend a lot of time making sure that the preparation for that is perfect. So by the time it comes to the class, that's the easy bit, that's the fun bit. And I know that I give basically 150% every time, because it's like someone might be having a rubbish day, like I might be having a rubbish day, and this might be what turns their mood around. There's two ways to look at everything, I guess. It's like you can either look at the worst in it or you can look at the best. And I've just, especially over the last year and a half, I've just been adamant that I'm always going to look at the best. I'm always going to look at the lessons. I'm always going to look at the joy. I'm always going to, where possible, choose happy. And I think that's quite a natural thing for me to then take into my classes. And then it's repaid to me when I meet the members and then they're so happy too. You know, they're so happy because I've had a positive impact on their life. And in turn, that
makes
me feel positive.
Such a good feeling. Do you believe happiness is a choice?
I do think it is a choice. And the reason I hesitated a bit there is because, you know, I've had a few things happen in my life in the last couple of years. I lost my best friend a year and a half ago. And a few weeks after she died, I was then diagnosed with breast cancer. And there are two things that meant that happiness felt like the furthest thing away from me. I could have stayed in that place. It would have been very, very easy for me to think that the world was against me, nothing's ever going to be the same, woe is me. Somehow I've managed to like dig deep and still find joy and choose to look at the positives. I think because of that, I say it tentatively, but I do think that happiness is a choice, yeah.
You have had a crazy 18 months. Mm. Autumn saw you grace the cover of Women's Health.
Yes.
Now, that's got to be a landmark moment
Yes. In
anybody's career. However, it was extremely important in raising awareness and you speaking out about breast cancer.
Yes.
First of all, the cover was rocking and it was pink.
It was pink, it was sparkly. We did a disco theme. And actually, when I was shown what the shoot would look like, what the theme was gonna be, I was so happy. I was like, this is so me. Women's Health was always like a bucket list dream.
It's goals.
It's just goals. So, like, it is. Every time I see someone on the cover of Women's Health, I'm like, that is goals. Look, did I ever think I'd be on the cover because I was raising awareness for breast cancer? No. Am I super proud that a year after being diagnosed, I was able to be confident enough to be on the cover and just take that moment? Like, I'm so proud of that. Not all of the hair is mine. My body looks a bit different because of my treatment. You know, I think one of the things that's like has been such a change of perspective for me is that if you had told me a few years ago you're going to be on the cover of Women's Health, I would have been training like crazy, because in my head it was like, I need to look the best I've ever looked to be on the cover of Women's Health. And then life happens and, you know, I find myself in treatment. My treatment was 3 months of chemo. I had chemo every week for 12 weeks. And then I went into radiotherapy. Then I went into surgery. And my perspective completely changed. It was like, this is now a healthy body that's been through so much. And I think I felt more confident doing that cover shoot than I would have done if I'd been beating myself up trying to have the perfect body. It was just so irrelevant compared to the moment itself.
That is actually so beautiful.
And I've got it framed.
I hope it's in the toilet, in the lounge, in all of the locations. But there is so much focus, and especially in the fitness industry, in having rippling abs and, you know, the perfect body. But it's so true. Happiness comes in all forms of shapes and sizes and health. And what a moment of triumph, a landmark moment, and that it's had and given you that realization of truly what is important. And it is health. It's not how you look.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't share that I was going through treatment for breast cancer whilst I was having my chemo. So I continued.
You actually continued to ride?
I continued to do my classes. And when I look back now, I actually can't believe that I did that. But at the time, I was really in the first bit of hard, raw grief. I needed focus. It was like I would have completely fallen apart if I stopped Peloton. It was something in my life that made me feel like me. I think it's incredibly important. Everyone's cancer journey is different. I'm really mindful about how I speak about cancer, because even if somebody was diagnosed with the exact same cancer as me, exactly the same diagnosis, everything would look completely different because our lives are different. The responsibilities, the other things that you've got going on are really different. But for me at that time, Danielle, my best friend, had just passed away. It was very traumatic. It was very unexpected. And so there was so much going on. And I just think I would have fallen apart. So my classes gave me structure. They gave me a goal every week. So I would get up in the morning on a Wednesday. I would teach a class at 7 a.m. I would give my best. And then I'd have a shower and I'd go to the chemo ward and I'd have my chemo. And then I'd be out for a couple of days. And then by the weekend, I'd get back into my classes. And the reason I say this is because during my chemo, I lost half of my hair and I kept half. I did something called cold capping, which enabled me to keep 50% of my hair.
That's not necessarily the usual process always.
No, it's not.
A lot of people fully lose their hair, even with cold capping.
Basically, the best outcome for cold capping is that you keep half and you lose half. And that was my goal. I mean, some people will use the cold cap and they'll keep all of their hair. Some people will use the cold cap and they lose all of their hair. And some people will be on a different type of chemo. And, you know, it's inevitable that hair loss is going to be a very, very common, if not almost 100% certain side effect. And when I was losing my hair, I felt like I looked so different. I didn't look as healthy. My body shape really changed. But I continued teaching my classes and nobody really noticed. No one really said anything. And I found that so strange.
That must have given you a real inner confidence to fight even harder.
It gave me an inner confidence, but it also taught me one of the biggest lessons that I really hope that I hold on to forever, is that I had put, especially being a professional dancer, so much importance on what I physically looked like. And here I was looking physically, in my opinion, very different, yet millions of members weren't picking up on it because I was making them feel a certain way, because I was making them feel a certain way through the classes and the music and the motivation. How I looked was almost irrelevant. And so that was the biggest lesson to me.
That's so empowering.
It's so empowering. It's like, it really is so much more than...
Doesn't it just show you that regardless of what you look like, your emotion and your ability to share energy is the most infectious source?
It's like a
battery that I think never runs out.
Energy is everything. And, you know, since things changed in my life and since my best friend passed, it's like I'm really big on energy. I'm big on the people I give my energy to. I'm big on hoping that when someone isn't here anymore, that there is some form of energy still around me that brings me comfort. It brings me joy. It brings me a small bit of peace. I really think that energy is what it's all about. And I think that beauty is way more than skin deep. But as I get older, I know instantly from someone's energy whether I'm in or out. Relationships, friends,
I
colleagues.
I feel you on that. It can change, actually.
Yeah.
Because you, as you develop, you get a greater understanding of people that zap you and suck
yeah.
you. And people that uplift
yeah, and they
you.
Can stay well away.
Bye.
God away. Goodbye.
I feel you on that. Talk to me a little bit about the motivation to change your nutrition and that quite a big call to stop drinking throughout yeah. that process and how you've stayed on that train, right?
Yeah, I'm so proud of that.
The tea train.
The tea train.
I'm not there with you.
You know what? It's such a personal choice. And don't get me wrong, I would be the first. I'm having drinks at home. I'm arriving to the event. I'm having Prosecco or champagne that they're handing me when
it's pink and sparkly though, right? Always.
Exactly. But basically, when I was diagnosed, a really, really good friend of mine is a fertility nutritionist, and she recommended a nutritionist that specializes in women with breast cancer. I just wanted to give myself the best possible chance of the treatment working the best it could and being as healthy as I could so that my body could fight what it needed to fight. I think I always ate well before, but I really focused on a diet that was lots of colour on my plate, lots of anti-inflammatory foods, lots of nutrient-dense foods because, you know, chemo does the job it needs to do, but it's taken a lot from your body in the process. And so what I was doing was trying to build my body up through food as much as I could. It was a no-brainer for me to stop drinking. And actually, it'd come off the back of that kind of few weeks in between losing Danielle and being diagnosed. And I was diagnosed 2 days before her funeral. Those few weeks, I mean, I wasn't really sleeping. I was drinking a lot. And I mean, I was drinking like Jack Daniels and stuff, which I never drink.
But it was just like, to protect yourself?
Yeah, it was just to numb the pain, to do something. I would be meeting friends and we just did not know what to do with ourselves. And so we would just go to a bar or we'd go to someone's house. And actually I was like, I can't carry on like this. I don't want to carry on like this. This is making me feel rubbish. And then when I was diagnosed, like I said, it was a no-brainer to stop drinking. I thought, I'm just going to not drink whilst I go through my treatment. And actually it's weird to say it's the best I've ever felt, but removing alcohol from my life has been the best decision. And one of the biggest things was that I felt like I'm socially anxious when I go into a new situation. And so I would have a couple of drinks to settle my nerves.
Yes.
A little bit of, you know, Dutch courage. But actually, I'm more confident than I ever was before because nothing is like masking me. I'm just like, okay, well, this is me.
If you don't like
this me. Is me. I go home at the right time, which means that I end up being more productive. I feel like I have deeper connections with people and I just like myself more. And I think I'm kinder to myself. And I still go out with my friends and they still drink and dance the night away and I will match them. I feel like I've got more energy than I did before. And maybe that comes from thinking, you know, I've got a second shot at life. That's how I see it. But I just, for me, I really want a family in the future. And when my main bulk of treatment finished for breast cancer, it wasn't over. I think I said in my women's health interview, when it's over, it's never really over. And I felt like that resonated with so many people.
Tell us a little bit about that, because a lot of people think once you ring that bell,
yeah,
the treatment's done and you're clear, that's it. But there is a bigger process.
Yeah.
Life changes. Right?
I mean, life is completely different. I had a friend that actually said to me, is everything okay? You seem really different. I thought, everything is different. My whole life is different. The way I look at life, the plans I had for the near future, everything is different. And typically, not all the time, but typically breast cancer treatment is a really long time, because I've always felt that breast cancer takes away some of the things that really make you feel feminine. You know, you lose your hair, you in cases lose one breast, both breasts. For me now, it's like I did IVF before I started my chemo to hopefully make sure that I can have a family. And now, whilst I'm on some of my maintenance treatment, I hope that when I come off of this, that my fertility is still intact and that Ben and I can go on to have a healthy, amazing family. But there's three things that, you know, do make you feel feminine. And I think that that is where the mental side of cancer begins. Once that main bulk of treatment is done, and really you're just, I was as focused as I could be. I was just like one step at a time, one part of this treatment at a time. And then when I finished my surgery, my treatment then turned to the maintenance part of the treatment, which was me taking this daily drug called tamoxifen, which a lot of women will be like, oh yeah, I know tamoxifen. And I'm on that for up to 10 years. And it's a daily drug, but it's like, you know, every day for 10 years you take that. And at some point you'll be like, oh, I'm taking this for breast cancer, and it keeps me safe, and I am so grateful for that. And I had a few other things going on as well, like I had this injection called Herceptin, which was a pretty big injection that I used to have in my leg every 3 weeks. I had that for a year. That's done. And I have another injection called Zoladex, which is basically protecting my ovaries, but that puts me in a menopausal state. So when people say, oh, it's amazing that that's behind you, actually, even though I look healthy and I am healthy, I'm taking a drug every day. My hair regrowth is amazing, but there are clips holding all the new hair in place. It doesn't look or feel how it used to. Can't start a family yet. I have hot flushes all the time. And I stay positive about these things, but I just think it's really important to talk about this bit, because everyone asks you how you are when you're going through chemo, because everyone knows that chemo is going to be really tough. And I think it's just good to keep the conversation going, because this bit is tough. It's good to raise awareness in these moments, because you're rebuilding you're rebuilding your life, but it looks very, very different.
What would you say to someone that has just been diagnosed? What was the inner grit within you that gave you that fight to just keep going?
I would say when you are first diagnosed, it is incredibly overwhelming. And chances are you'll be given a load of words and terminology and phrases that you have just never heard before. And I think my biggest piece of advice would be three things. Build your support network. Get those people in place that are going to hold you up when you are just completely falling apart. I did completely fall apart in the beginning. I think sometimes people go, gosh, you got through that so well. And it's like, I had my moments. I completely fell apart in the beginning.
And nobody sees that.
No one sees that. You get to a point where maybe you don't really want to share that because you don't want to frighten other people. But I had a great support network around me with friends and family. But my mum and Ben, my fiance, were just there at every single appointment, at every single chemo session. And the second bit of advice would be get that support network to really get knowledgeable about your particular diagnosis, so that when you go into these rooms, and they're usually small rooms with consultants and oncologists and cancer nurses that are saying things to you that you don't want to hear, you need to know that there's an extra set of ears with you that are going to be taking in all of the things that you need to know. And I think knowledge is power, and it brought me a lot of safety and comfort. And I just felt like it brought me control, actually. And then the third thing, and I think this is probably the most important, one step at a time. I used to get so pissed off, actually, when people said to me, stay strong, stay strong. So I used to think, God, waking up in the morning and trying to get through a day when I am going through cancer treatment, the baseline of what I'm doing is strength. But I think staying focused is a choice. And you need to break your treatment down into maybe your first focus is chemo. And you do everything you can to keep your body as stress-free, as calm, as nourished as possible. And then when you go into the next bit of your treatment, it's a new focus. And when you go into radiotherapy or whatever you go into your next part of your treatment, because everyone's treatment is going to look different, it will be a new focus. That focus will look a bit different. But I really think that looking at the big picture is incredibly overwhelming. You need to break it down into bite-sized pieces, into manageable chunks, and just keep focused. Sometimes that will look like just eating the right things. Other times it will look like not Googling everything. It will look like having a big old cry. But
a good old cry
is really okay. I mean,
it's really okay. My
fair share of good old cries, and it can feel lonely. I think even with a support network around you, it can feel incredibly lonely. And there are so many groups. There's some fantastic charities and some groups that can really make you feel like you're less alone, especially at this age. I mean, it didn't do me any good when cancer nurses and consultants were telling me how young I was.
Oh, you're really young.
You're really young. And I thought, oh, thanks. But there are going to be other people that are going through something similar to you. And I think just by the nature of my job, having the platform of over 7 million members at Peloton, I have become a kind of support network for some other young women or any aged women that have gone through a cancer journey or gone through loss or grieving or whatever, just by doing my job, just by being me. You just need to see people that represent something that you've gone through or you're going through in life. And
has it changed your relationship with fitness and your own routine?
Yeah, massively. I train for life, whereas before I would maybe do a crash course to look great in a bikini for summer.
Now, 3 week shred. Sure. Nobody can relate to that.
Honestly, I used to say to my PT, right, I've got a shoot. And he'd be like, when is it? And I'd be like, 9 days. And he'd be like, oh my God, man.
What are you doing? So now you're waking up. What is your reason for exercising?
In short, Ben and I say, and we said this from the beginning of my treatment, we want to be fit for life.
Love
so
that.
I train, you know, I got up this morning, it was pitch black. I could not be asked, if I'm completely honest.
I got myself
to my PT session. I felt great after because I was finding a bit of time in the day that was for me. I've got it done, so I don't have to think about it now. I want to be ready for whatever life throws at me. Like, I don't think I was mentally ready for a cancer diagnosis because obviously I'd already been through something like that I would wish upon nobody. But I do think that in terms of my physical fitness, I was ready to fight with everything that I had. And so I think being fit for life, being fit for whatever life throws at you so you can show up in the best way you can is the reason that I train. What my body looks like as a result of that is actually somewhat irrelevant to me now. But I know what it feels like to feel rubbish and have no energy and, you know, to be scared and untrusting of my body. So I guess the goal is to just like really trust my body, know that it's fit and healthy, know that it's cancer free. Just always be ready, not be scared, but just be ready.
Be ready for whatever life throws your way. You mentioned the community.
Yes.
And how special that is at Peloton. You said the word or numbers.
Yes.
7.
I know.
Over
7 million. And I tell you what's hilarious. When I did my first ever class, people were joining on the leaderboard. We didn't even have the function to be able to do a live class. So I recorded a class and we put it up on the Peloton platform, and 150 people joined that class. Now, if I was in a boutique studio in London, I'd be buzzing with 150 people. Yeah. But in terms of Peloton, that number was relatively small. But to me, it was an incredible moment. Like, there were 150 people all over the world that were taking my class. And now those numbers are in their hundreds of thousands.
Right, let's reframe that. There's hundreds and thousands of people tuning in to join you on a ride. How have you managed to maintain your humble roots? You guys, as Peloton instructors, you're sort of like celebrities in your own right. Is that a bizarre feeling?
I never look at it like that, but I think that when you do something that has a positive impact on people's lives, they will love you for that. I remember in the pandemic in 2020, Peloton in the UK was growing, but then we went into lockdowns and it just went through the roof. We didn't really realize how much it had grown because we weren't seeing anybody. And then when we came out of the lockdown and Ben and I would be walking down the street and you'd start to, oh my God, that's my Peloton instructor. And I'd be like, oh, they're talking about me. It's just been so bizarre, actually. But I never lose sight of the fact that first and foremost, I am a fitness coach. Anything that comes on top of that will never, ever kind of overtake my job, which is a lot of hard work and wanting to motivate people to be fit and healthy and happy and sparkly.
How much of your dance do you interject in that choreography?
At times, too much.
Because it is, a class is like choreography, right? The music drops at a certain point, you're going up hills, all of the things.
Exactly. I would say 90% of the time, I'm picking my music first and then building my fitness plan and the workout around the music so that people do feel like when the beat's about to drop, we're coming out the saddle, we're pushing, we're, you know, I might even find a little moment in the workout for a little dance break.
Love
a little
that.
Dance routine.
Love that. Have you ever thought about being a DJ? Because it kind of correlates, you know?
I really have, actually. That is like a little hobby I've got in the background that I'm like, one day I'll probably be like the granny that's DJing somewhere.
Nice.
And I'm happy with
that. Ibiza vibes.
Yes. Yes.
What's your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
Monday for me starts at 5 a.m.
That is like really early and it's definitely dark in the winter.
It's easier to get up than in the summer. Yes. But what I love is that I teach a 7 a.m. class and that happens to be a member class. So I am surrounded by people that just have equally woken up in the dark and the cold and got themselves to that moment. It's a great way to kick off my week. I would say that I'm not the best morning person, but I am the most productive in the morning. Kicking off my Monday nice and early means that I typically get a lot done on a Monday. So
it's the best feeling ever.
It's a good feeling. So I don't have the Sunday scaries. I think maybe that's to do with not drinking anymore. But you know what's really strange is I've never really had like a Monday to Friday job. Even when I was a dancer, it was like my weekend might have been a Tuesday to Friday or a Monday to Friday if I didn't have anything on. So the concept of a Monday has always been a bit different to me, but I like kickstarting the week early. I do snooze though.
Do you? How many snoozes have you got?
I set an alarm for 5 a.m, 5:01, 5:03, 5:04, 5:06.
That is serious snoozing.
It's serious.
What's the
snoozing
point in snoozing? I actually don't get it. I like
no,
me,
there is no point.
It's alarm and it's a launch. It's like a projectile launch out of bed.
You've got it right.
Because this just prolongs the period. Because the hard bit in waking up, I mean, let's say waking up is a gift.
Yes, exactly.
The hard moment is actually the wallow to get out.
Yes.
The minute you're out, you're up. 2 minutes, 2 minutes into it, we're vibing. The machine's already going 2 minutes after I'm out of bed.
But I am always snoozing, and then I'm already pushing it with the time I'm giving myself to get ready. So then I'm rushing and I'm like, I should have just woken up. So that's my advice. Just when the alarm goes off, get out of bed.
Rushing's not a vibe, is it?
It's not a vibe.
Are you waking up to any particular music? Have you got a vibe going there, or is it just a...
I used to wake up to... My alarm was the Boo Radleys, Wake Up Boo.
Wake up,
it's a beautiful morning,
sunshine.
And that, honestly, is exactly.
Do you like my singing?
I do like your singing. I like your dance moves more.
Yeah, the bop. I don't know if my mate would appreciate that.
But listen,
what style was your dance?
Everything.
Come on.
Give us
a little bop.
Well, I'm trained in ballet, tap, jazz. Okay. I tell you what I can't do. I can't sing, even though I went to performing arts college and I did a lot of singing.
You've totally overridden the fact that I asked you to give us a little pop. Wake up, it's a beautiful morning, sunshine, da da da.
This is as far as my dancing
goes
now.
It's really like a knee wiggle. I hope when you're in the bar, you still give it a bit more, because we can't be having anyone... You know, undermining the fact you're not drinking. I'm expecting table dance.
Listen, I went to a gig last week and I had my hands up in the air for 2.5 hours. I was like having the best time. And if someone had looked at me, they would never have thought, she looks like she used to be a professional dancer. The two do not go hand in hand.
Even better.
The night dancing and the dancing as a job, they look very different.
Leanne, lastly, we ask all our guests if they have any life mottos or quotes that they can share with our listeners.
Okay, so I love this. I would say, I already said it before, but I think the biggest thing that I live by is being fit for life. I think it's a great motto to have. It's trying to erase the need for like instant gratification and actually just like building a life that one you like, that is going to give you longevity. And so if you can just think to yourself, I want to be fit for life, I think you can along the way just make some healthier choices.
Leanne Hainsby, thank you so much for sharing the light and positivity around your incredible journey, your openness, your humbleness. It really, truly is a thing of beauty. I've absolutely loved our very cold walk and talk. What a way to see in the new year. Fit for life.
Fit for life. Thanks for having me.
I want to sparkle. I want to go and sparkle.
You're going to come to the studio and you're going to come and get sparkly with me.
That sounds freaking epic. Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Do make sure you subscribe. The audio drops every single Monday morning in the early hours. In fact, at 12 a.m. So if you are an early riser, and you are getting up at 5 a.m. to join Leanne on the bike, especially when you're commuting, right?
Yes.
We're walking, we're talking. One of our listeners, it's a wrap.